Hey, grandkids, welcome to another edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. I am playing host tonight, and I am Kevin DeFrango. With me to form the GD tandem, and we will let those initials dream up any way you'd like. Mr. Dusty Giebank, how you doing, Dusty?
Well, I feel great about being had, so thank you.
Yes, you have. You've been a regular on these specialty audios, and you haven't had the fine pleasure of pulling out one of these regular weekly duty calls in a while. Here, how's that feel?
It feels weird to get back into the normal groove. For a while, you and I were the only ones doing anything on the site. So nice to know that we didn't have to for a while.
Yeah, it is nice to get a little bit of time off every now and again, especially when you're, well, at least for me, up to my gills in work, so.
Yeah.
But,
McDonald's keeping you busy, but, hey, well worth it for those delicious quarter pounders.
I still just want another greasy hash brown, really, but.
Oh, my God, those are so good.
Yeah.
If I'm going to die of a heart attack, I want it to be with a smile on my face. And one of the best ways to have a smile on my face is to get a McDonald's breakfast with one of those greasy, fucking terrible-for-you hash browns, because they taste awesome. My God.
Amen on that one. Yeah, you are preaching to the choir. It's the first thing I do. When I drop my dogs off at the kennel, I hit McDonald's on my way before I start driving to Altoona.
Sure.
And, yeah, the first thing I always eat is the hash brown. I mean, that thing gets devoured quicker than you can almost blink.
I believe it. Definitely. Well, sadly, that's going to be the high point of this audio, because now we have to talk about wrestling.
Yeah, that is that could be the highlight. Although maybe we're saving the best for last here.
Yeah, probably.
Well,
so we're definitely not saving the best for first, because we're talking about TNA.
Yeah, we are getting the shit out of the way for. Yes, as you point out, is TNA. Honestly, I don't even know where to start with this whole Rob Van Dam mess, because you probably did not witness what they did to him at the end of Impact this past week, did you?
You know, I skimmed through Impact, but I didn't make it all the way through. So, no, I did not see the end of it.
Oh, it was hysterical. He was made to look like he had been eviscerated, practically.
Okay.
His tights were ripped. He kind of had, like, slash marks on them. Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Like, they had really done up the damage pretty well. So I hope at least one thing is that they're not, it's still stupid to vacate the title.
Yeah.
I wonder what
the hell is wrong with having him lose a match if they want to get the title off of him. But I don't expect a reasonable answer to that either. So.
Yeah, well, there are just so many questions, especially now that we know that the reason they're stripping him is because they've used up too many of his dates already.
Yep. You know what this reminds me of? Jeremy had an example, and my example is sort of like that. It's like Survivor Gabon a few years ago. I remember this because Randy is my all-time favorite Survivor contestant. He is a fucking prick. He's an asshole. He's a terrible human being, but it makes for good television. And he was on the Loser Tribe. They were given a supply of rice that, in theory, should have lasted until the merge. Instead, his tribe insisted on eating 3 meals a day of rice instead of one or two. Well, guess what? After about a week, they are dangerously short on rice. Go fucking figure. Well, as such, TNA, instead of just signing them to a normal contract, a one-year contract, a two-year contract, we will use you for 1 year and then your contract will expire. They gave him a contract for a certain number of dates. This in itself is brain dead. It is doubly brain dead that they decided to use him for every single show right off the bat, knowing that they have a per-date contract with the guy. So now they blew through him like a fucking snowblower through snow. Gone! And now they have to get the title off of him. They are not a serious company. They're a fucking joke. They do everything wrong. They're fucking shameful.
Yeah, I really cannot add anything to that because it is such... I mean, there are so many different ways to get around what they did. They made AJ Styles look like a complete bozo in this whole thing.
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, not only have they burned up Van Damme's dates, but it is pretty much to no avail because they fucked one of their own guys.
Yep. Bingo.
It's just like, wow. Like, I mean, there's just a lot of carnage along the way.
So many levels of stupid here. Just so many levels.
Yeah. It's just, and I think that was another thing that Jeremy said in his article. It's just like, just when you think they can't get any dumber,
right?
They do something and you're just like, oh my lord, you guys are even dumber than I thought. Like,
right.
It is so impressive.
Now, me and Mean Gene, world famous message board poster from The Torch, Ben Granny, and other sites, had a contest to see how long we could make it through the Dixie Carter U-shoot. He lasted like 10 minutes or something, and I only lasted 8 minutes and 5 seconds. I couldn't fucking take it. She's a total idiot. She has the worst voice I've ever heard in my life, and she's just fucking stupid. And that explains everything. The company is run by imbeciles from the very top on down. And what you get then is stupid bullshit like this.
Yeah, I mean, I keep on wanting, you know, people keep on saying, oh, we hope this, we hope that. Well, I think, and the other thing that always strikes me as funny, too, is that Eric and I liked that one episode like 2-3 months ago or something like that. And it has been one royal stop after another ever since that time frame. I'm just like, okay, never mind. Just shut up the next time you even see a decent episode of Impact. Just say, oh, you know what? It was actually decent, but you know what? They're going to royally fuck this up in the near future anyway, so who gives a shit?
Yep. Every good episode of Impact is, to quote the Stone Roses, fool's gold, because they will follow it up with something god-awful terrible.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of something else. Well, I guess that more applies to the whole, what was it, promo list, whole effing show.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bizarre. Well, A, they did fit in a couple of short promos, which kind of cracked me up.
Yep.
And then, B, they had a whole hour of promos after it and, having TNA reaction on, which really had a whole set of problems that halfway through it, I'm like, oh, fuck off. I'm tired of hearing you guys talk.
By the way, I heard a little birdie told me that Vince Russo hated the whole effing show, but he loved reaction. Funny then.
Yeah, no, the whole effing show wasn't bad. It was just, you know, the one thing that I had a problem with is the matches didn't seem to be terribly longer than they would have been on a normal Impact.
Right.
Now, if you're going to dedicate your whole effing show to wrestling, then but right, like, have a quality match in there or something. Like, I don't even know if there was anything that was halfway decent. And, I mean, I usually defend the guys that are actually, you know, performing in the ring, at least that aspect of them. But I don't even really remember the card at all.
No. Nothing drove me crazy. Nothing was memorable.
Yeah, well, aside from the silly, beautiful people gimmick, which is just lying. If they actually get smart enough and put Angelina and Velvet Sky back together, TNA will have at least done one thing right in the month.
Needs to happen immediately.
Yep. And sure, just let Madison Rain and whatever she wants to name herself. I already figured her TNA name because she's still Victoria in my head.
Yep, me too. What the hell was it? Tara?
Tara, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, well. Yeah, have them be two separate groups and we're good to go. Whatever.
Totally. Yep.
Okay, well, I think we've really talked about TNA enough already. I think you're fed up.
Thank God, I could push you. Okay.
Well, since you actually ordered the pay-per-view, I will, I guess I could ask you, what was there, of the singles matches, was there anything of a highlight before we get to really what bled into Raw on Monday night?
Talking about a standout quality match, I guess the closest thing would be Orton and Sheamus, which was round and about 3 stars, which isn't a real ringing endorsement of the match, but you know what? The thing about Orton and Sheamus that I really like is their selling. They both were exceedingly good at selling in that match. So I will praise them for that. I will bemoan the fact that Randy Orton has way too many tattoos. It is a terrible trend in wrestling. Everybody getting sleeves. I do not approve of that. And once again, the match wasn't really a standout match. It was 20 minutes of 3-star action. It would be a good, if you were putting together like a great wrestling show, if it was the third best match on the show, that would be great. But instead, it was like the best match on the show until the main event was about equal to the main event in quality-wise, which means it wasn't a great show. There was a lot of doo-dah kind of matches. Kane versus Mysterio is not going to be a great match, you know?
No. Anything involving Kane really is not going to be a great match.
No. And I liked how they booked the Big Show match, but again, you're not going to have a good match in that kind of a situation.
Right.
Yeah, I like the Dog and Pony Show. I really like the Dog and Pony Show, and I like CM Punk as a chicken shit heel. But again, not a good match.
Right. There's a whole lot of sizzle and not a lot of steak, is what you're saying.
Uh-huh. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, you know, always good to steal lines from JR.
It would have been a very good Raw, I think.
gotcha.
What the pay-per-view boils down to.
Yeah, I didn't think that they. I found that even with the way the title changes have happened fairly frequently in the WWE recently. I guess that was another thing that did not really make me worry that either of the title holders were going to lose.
Yeah, you're totally right.
I
never really had a doubt about the Kane match in particular.
Yeah, since that was one of the it was hysterical, really, because Jeremy and I start talking about the obvious thing that happened on the pay-per-view Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there the whole time thinking of the Daniel Bryan return as the mystery seventh person in the tag match.
Sure.
And he was thinking Kane being revealed as the Undertaker's attacker.
Well, I got a secret to tell you. You're both right.
Yes, but it did lead to a minor problem with communication since we were thinking about different things.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
it's very hard to communicate with Jeremy anyway because of his poor typing skills. Oops. Sorry.
I think that's a daily thing to make fun of him on my part.
It's painful. I'm sorry, Jeremy. I love you, but come on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He needs to do something about how he puts it. We need to send him back to a typing class with his with his almost stepson, see if he can do a little home ec there and learn how to type on a computer.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. So I did kind of bring up the surprise guest there, which also kind of, because if Sheamus Orton was the best match, then that was a Raw match, which leads into, Monday Night Points. But we also had Team WWE versus Team Nexus, or just Nexus in general. You know, one thought that had hit me that they didn't, I didn't think they clarified very well going into this, was that Nexus had an abyss moment, really, and they had kind of referred to someone being in charge of them, but that has slowly gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
Which is more of a point, I guess, than a than a question, I suppose.
Sure.
But then on top of that, the other thing that they didn't really define very well is they didn't define why the Raw locker room was so threatened, I guess.
Yeah. Good call.
You know, they didn't really clarify that point, and that to me was a bit of a problem heading into this. And there's one other thing that I'll maybe try to throw in here later.
Okay.
But what did you think of the match? Well, actually, you already said it was about a 3-star match on par with Orton and Sheamus there.
I would say match quality-wise, yep. Definitely more memorable than Orton versus Sheamus. It went nearly 40 minutes, and it had a whole bunch of stuff happening. So 13 different eliminations leading to one sole survivor. And pretty much all the top names in the company, sans Orton and Sheamus. So definitely the one-match show for the most part there. One match that everybody's going to be talking about.
Right. Was there anybody Was there anybody that stood out for you, at least on Nexus?
You know, Sheffield was halfway too impressive. He's never going to be a great worker, but he impressed.
Yeah. I'd like Jeremy, I think, gave me an accurate description of him, which is the WWE is working on their new version of Batista.
I like it. That's pretty damn close to exactly right.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty accurate.
Yep.
I guess did the elimination order mean anything to you, or was it just one of those ones where you're just like, well, they had to get people out of there at some point, so that's kind of who got canned in that manner?
Well, obviously, Darren Young is at the bottom of the Nexus totem pole. He's fucking terrible, and pretty much everyone knows it, so it definitely made sense for him to go first. Other than that, I think they see Sheffield as the number two guy in the group. So it was just more of a logical booking thing to get him out in the middle. That wasn't really a pecking order thing. That was more of a, this makes sense based on what we're doing right now kind of thing. So a little bit of both there.
Gotcha. What the hell? Oh, Jiminy Christmas. Well,
oh, the wheels are coming right off.
Yeah, the wheels are coming right off. I'm trying to figure out a decent way to tie together Raw and the finish of the match would tie in quite well to the beginning of Raw, because that was another one of those things that to me was a bit of an oddity. So
the finish of the match gave me a fucking aneurysm. That's what I think of the finish of the match.
What was your proposed finish to the match there? Like, I didn't enjoy it. I'm such a fence sitter sometimes, but like, mm-hmm. It wasn't one of those things where I said, wow, like, I didn't think I had an aneurysm. I was just kind of like, well, to me, and I guess this is that other point that I talked about, they never really have presented Nexus to me as on par with anybody.
Sure.
Like, and to me, I guess that's why I didn't have a problem with the ending of the match. It's just like, well, he's in a one-on-one situation with the guy who's a whatever time champion.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason he should win.
Well, I felt like this match would have been the place to establish them as the credible contenders. And I guess that's why I was so angry. Because I feel like this was their opportunity to really place them in that spot. And they failed to do so.
Yeah, and I think that's the point that I agree with you on. Like, the handling of it really could have been much better. Because didn't you, what did you want to see? You wanted to see Cena get...
So, yeah, after Jericho and Edge get eliminated, they beat the shit out of Cena on the outside, and he gets counted out. That way, he doesn't have to get pinned. He can keep all of his credibility. He can have an excuse for getting eliminated. So he saves face. But the point is, he gets eliminated. So now we're down to Danielson against three. And as somebody pointed out, I think it was Jeff Brown or New Bob Dole, and I'm not really sure which one, but I want to give them both shout-outs, so I don't care, said that it's like the Survivor Series 87 finish with Bam Bam Bigelow, where he goes 3-on-1. So Danielson then eliminates Slater, and then he eliminates Justin Gabriel. But then, because of such great odds and the fact that he's tired, Wade Barrett can come in and finish him off, and then Wade Barrett is the sole survivor. That way, you give a plausible reason for Danielson losing. He beat two guys before being overcome because he was tired and he was in there too long. He didn't have anyone to tag, and the whole time he was kicking Gabriel in Slater's ass. Barrett was on the outside resting. So there's his excuse for losing, but he still looks strong in doing so. And then Barrett gets a win, a big win on a big pay-per-view that he kind of snaked out of there because, you know, he wasn't doing much until the very end, and he kept himself fresh. So it was kind of cheating, but not really. But the point is, he still won the match, so now he's got a major pay-per-view win, and you can go straight into Barrett versus Danielson, and they both look stronger than they did going into the show.
And you know what would also be accomplished in that whole thing?
Tell me.
Michael Cole could really bitch about the choice of Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, being
Daniel
put on
Bryan.
The team.
I'm sorry, now I got you doing it. But yeah, you're right.
So, you know, he can champion The Miz even more, and, you know, he can pile on Bryan just a bit more, too, for costing Team Raw. Yeah, wow. That, that really would have done wonders. So, yeah, I definitely agree more with that type of finish. But like I said, aneurysm thankfully withheld after reading the results on my part here.
Okay, fair enough.
So,
better for your health not to have an aneurysm.
But that leads into Raw there, which starts off with the losers of all bizarre things. Like, that does not happen all that well. Do you think that was the best really set up to help them out? Or do you think would have been better for them to rain on, you know, John Cena's parade?
Yeah, it would have made them look bitter and would have made them look a little stronger, I think, instead of coming right out. Because they didn't really have a solid point to talk about. They lost. You know? What are they going to talk about? The fact that they lost? Did that make them look like losers? You know? So this is definitely where WWE doesn't have the best booking team in the world. And this is an example of where it really cost them. It was hurting Nexus's act by having them come up first. And it's a small point that they probably would have no clue. If you tried to explain it to them, they wouldn't get it. But it's a small point where if they had better bookers in place, that would have never happened.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how, well, and everything had been going fairly well for this angle, too. And, really, when they had the ball near the goal line here, it seems that they've fumbled it, or at least gotten stopped at the one a couple of times here.
Yep. I totally agree with that.
Now, what did you think about them, winning all but one of their matches throughout the night?
Yeah.
Do you think that helped get their heat back, so to speak?
I think it was probably the best thing they could have done. I don't get why they had to lose once. That's kind of weird.
I really was all for slimming the group a little bit more than they did already.
Yeah, you and I both made that point. It's time to cut. Time to cut a little fat.
Yep-o. And I think the amount of ring time that I've seen David Otunga get is a fairly clear indication of what they think his future is, honestly. And really, he's gotten less mic time as this thing has gone along.
Yes, he has. They've slowly got cooler and cooler on him as they realize that he's basically junk I would cut two, and I would definitely cut Atunga, and I would probably cut Darren Young. Those would be the two that I would probably cut.
Well, we did get the ladder accomplished at the end of the night, but before we get to the end of the night...
Yeah, you're only spoiling stuff, dude.
Huh?
You're spoiling stuff by giving it out of order, man. Penalty on the play.
Oh, the host gets a negative one for bringing up the answer, right? there was another point that I think it is not a major difference, but it is a difference. You are quite enjoying the act that Michael Cole is putting on currently.
Yeah, the whole pro-Miz, anti-Bryan is, I think it's enjoyable. Now you will tell me why it's not. I will listen to you.
I think my problem with it, because I started thinking on it more when I realized that we were going to do a show together. I guess the problem for me is that it's more of a consistency issue that I have with it still. It seems like they want to make him a heel commentator, but they don't really want to pull the trigger on it.
Right, because he's still pro babyface pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah. And, like, the other thing that he needs to kind of, to me, that he needs to learn a little bit to help out is that he needs at least some type of weaselly answer to kind of, even if it's a pointless point, to at least, like, he could not counteract any of Lawler's arguments this past week.
Right.
So, like... I guess those are really my two big problems. Like, it's really helping Bryan out, because there's – I think you can almost tell how much the crowd dislikes Cole because how much they chant for him.
Yes. Yes.
So I guess those are my thoughts, but it would be interesting because, like, the idea that you have of making him a manager would really eliminate that eliminate the consistency problem.
Absolutely.
First off.
He could then focus all of his energies on hating Daniel Bryan.
I guess we could talk a little bit about his moment in the sun, too, here on Raw.
Sure.
I don't know. Did he look strong enough to you throughout that to kind of keep people interested, I suppose?
Yeah. I would say yes. I can make a... Damn, I'm losing my voice. Great time to do it. I can make a case for how what they're doing is very good. And keeping his name out there and keeping him pushed. At some point, he's going to have to win a singles match.
He's only won that one tag match on Raw.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So at some point, people are going to start to go, okay, we're into this guy, but he couldn't beat the fucking popcorn guy one-on-one. So they're going to have to do something about that sooner than later.
Right.
But as far as the push goes, I'm totally down with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, he actually looked a little bit bigger this time around. I don't know if they gave him some Vegemite or something, but...
Could be.
I thought he packed on a little bit of 5 pounds of muscle or something in the meantime.
Sure. Clean shaven to represent his baby face.
Yeah, that would probably help him to keep the beard off. Yep. It looks okay, but he really does not have a very burly beard in any manner.
No, he doesn't. He almost strikes me, I'm going to get major heat for this, but he's a tad bit feminine in his facial expressions and gestures and such. So the beard was kind of a weird juxtaposition.
You don't want to see him with chest hair next?
Nah, not really.
He can't go Shawn Michaels or CM Punk on us.
Yeah. You know, I don't see it happening. I really don't. He's more of a Bob Backlund. And I know for me that's an insult, but I don't mean it as an insult. I just mean look-wise.
Gotcha.
Yep.
I'm trying to think if, he did have that, and he got the beat down there from The Miz afterwards.
Yep.
I guess that really kind of brought out that part of Cole where it's just like Lawler's just kind of sitting there at him just aghast, really. Which
right.
is kind
like,
of funny.
What the
like,
hell are you talking about? Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of funny. But I did like that, too, because it really... even if they throw Daniel Bryan in a feud with The Miz, like, I really don't see any problem with it, especially with the way they are presenting the Miz's ascent up the WWE ladder currently.
Sure.
Gotcha. Was there anything else, I guess, on from the Nexus? Oh, well, what the?
Well, yeah,
oh,
I mean, it was basically the Nexus show. Every match, I think, except that stupid fucking Divas match, had Nexus members involved. And, yeah, like you said, there was only one that didn't have Nexus winning, and it was, of course, John Cena. John Cena's got to win. He's the new Triple H.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's something I need to start holding against him, it is dawning on me that I need to start holding this whole winning thing against him. I don't intend to...
There is absolutely no shame in doing a job every now and then. And ever since they stopped switching the belt between Cena and Orton, Cena doesn't lose. Even when... it could benefit them storyline-wise to have him lose. A shady finish against, like, Wade Barrett in a singles match or something would be great.
Even have someone... this was something that they really could use. You know, Nexus is kind of beaten down a little bit already because of their loss at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Crap, where'd my train of thought just get to?
Uh-oh.
There's no reason that somebody like Edge or even Jericho could maybe help out Nexus a little bit just to kind of get back at Cena. And then he can job... and then, you know, we got no problems.
Beautiful. Again, if there's a reason for Cena losing, that he can get on the mic and say, hey, I only lost because of such and such, and now that makes me even more motivated to go out there and kick some booty. What's wrong with that? Where are you losing anything with that?
Nothing, and that sounds like that is perfectly in his speech wheelhouse, honestly. You know, I mean, that just sounds like a typical Cena speech.
Yes, it does. Which, by the way, can I take, let me pause 10 seconds for station identification, to say that I hate how fucking ha-ha John Cena's speeches are lately. I mean, you're trying to sell a pay-per-view, and he's out there telling shitty jokes. You know?
Yeah, they were really terrible this week. They were downright awful.
Yep.
You know, normally I've had enough beer at that point and I might even chuckle at them, but no, it was not going to help. I was way too sober.
Yeah. This week was pretty inexcusable on that part.
Yeah, there's no reason to show Heath Slater is Wendy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that was it's just like, wow, seriously, someone went, this is funny.
Yeah.
And they're just crickets chirping in the background.
Right. The poor fans think they bought a ticket to a wrestling show.
Well, really, for a Monday Night Raw, they got an awful lot of wrestling. Unfortunately, it was in 3-minute matches.
Right, right.
All with, and again, I guess this, you know, a lot of people are complaining about the matches all being fluke finishes, but I kind of go back to that. Hey, these guys were never presented as individual ass kickers. Like, to me, there's no reason that this kind of stuff shouldn't happen. I mean, I saw that as soon as, like, uh-oh, Justin Gabriel's in trouble against Randy Orton. I'm like, come on, seriously, Sheamus is going to interfere.
Right. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. They've never been portrayed as serious threats.
It's literally just been their unity against everybody else that was the real threat.
Mm-hmm. The fact that there's 7 of them makes them a threat.
And I mean, I think that's why they harp so much going into SummerSlam on the dissension between...
Yeah.
You know, Team WWE, it's just like, well, we can't really say, hey, these guys should kick these guys' asses if they're on the same page.
Right.
So we'll concentrate on this other area.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't really have that much else. I think we've... Well, actually, you know the one thing I haven't covered?
Talk to me.
The ending, after Darren Young did in fact lose.
Yes.
To me, it was a bit of a chicken shit move on John Cena's part. If he's your hero's hero, shouldn't he be helping out Darren Young even because he knows what's going to happen to him?
This is mucky because, I mean, Darren Young was just trying to fucking end his career, you know?
Right.
At his throat pretty constant at the pay-per-view and then the singles match and everything. So, it's hard to say. It's a rock in a hard place.
Gotcha.
I see what you're saying, though. If he is the champion of all things good, and he saw somebody unjustly getting attacked by 6 guys, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and at least it Nexus a little bit of power back, because they're just like, because they got him to actually back down. Like, I mean, because I guess he did almost contemplate it for a second there, because he did stay in the ring for a second longer.
Sure.
Maybe it's just because he thought he was going to get the beat down, but he's like,
That was my impression.
Maybe I should just take off here. Maybe that's just the better choice.
Right. My initial impression was like, are they coming after me? No, I'm okay. All right, I better get out of here. That was kind of how I read it.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that was at least fairly, it still isn't enough, really, from Cena to just back down from that grouping either, really.
Right.
They still, I still think that they need a little extra oomph. There's no reason they shouldn't bring in a Chavo Guerrero for a, no, he's on SmackDown now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm sure they've got somebody on the roster that could job to one of those guys and take their finisher. I mean, aside from Chris Jericho.
You know, I want horsemen beating. You know, like backstage, they all fucking kick the shit out of Cena or something, and they've got the fucking door locked or something. You know, they got two guys on watch or something, you know? And the rest of them are just fucking mugging Cena. You know? Like a long extended beatdown in the ring or something. You know?
That'd be perfect. You have Skip and somebody else sitting there, Otunga, I guess. Looks like a big chunk of muscle, I suppose.
Yep.
You throw them out there as the guards.
Yeah. And the rest of them are using chains and chairs and whatever isn't nailed down and just beat the fuck out of them. You know? Just get some heat.
Yeah, that would have worked out pretty well.
Yep.
Unfortunately, as we've noted, the ball dropping has amplified here.
Yeah.
As this Nexus angle has gone on.
Yep. I really think this is the spot where it gets exclamated. Where they really could have taken him to the next level at the pay-per-view in Raw. And, I mean, in spite of the winnings and stuff, they're really not much stronger than they were when they started.
Yeah. I suppose I agree with the logic that I've presented as to why they should win that way. It really doesn't do a whole lot for them, as you say. Like, it just really doesn't.
That's the boondoggle WWE is in right now.
Yep. So. They have created quite a mess for themselves.
Uh-huh.
Out of something once so promising, it's still just, well, I guess at least now it's still kind of promising.
Right. But it really needs to get into that third gear soon, or else it's going to be a failure.
Agreed. Hey, we'll see what happens with the slim down group this coming week, see if that helps out at all.
And I both agree they could stand to get rid of at least one more guy.
If they got rid of Otunga or even Slater, I would not be completely disappointed.
Yep.
One other little thing that struck me during the show was they were having that WWE Gives Back kind of a thing. I don't know exactly what it was called.
Sure.
But Evan Bourne was there, you know, in some inner city place, you know, like helping kids build something or whatnot.
Right.
And they actually gave him the mic, and I was really impressed. Like, A, it seemed like he's one of those guys that even if he wasn't in wrestling, he'd be doing something like that at some point.
Sure.
But he just seemed like he was just kind of a natural on the mic. Did you get the same thing, or am I kind of blowing up?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I've been on board with him for a long fucking time. I think he has the potential to be the next huge babyface superstar in wrestling.
Okay, well, I guess I had always kind of called into question some of his verbal skills, just because they don't give him the mic that much. The couple of times that I'd heard him, I'm like, he's not too bad.
That's the thing. I know he can talk because the few times he's done it, it's been really grim, really good. When he was getting that title shot, they let him talk a little, and that was good. And on Monday night, it was good, you know? He just
seemed
very uneasy about going full bore with him, and I really don't know why.
Yeah, they really should be fine. He should be Raw's version of Rey Mysterio, as I have before.
Yeah. Amen.
Except younger and unmasked.
I think he's got he is Ricky Morton in this modern age. Young, good-looking, high flyer. He can sell. He can talk a little. All the women love him, you know. Or would love him if there was a reason to. Kids would get behind him easily. I don't see any drawback.
Yeah, neither do I, honestly. Like, that's one of those ones that's a... I think this is kind of one of the negatives of the Nexus angle is that they've had to take up so much time with them.
Yep.
They have really let a lot of other things slide by. Like, that's been the story. Sheamus and Orton and The Miz, I guess, you can kind of throw into that mix since he's been threatening to cash in the briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
But,
it really reminds me of Nitro. When the NWO was hot, people forget because the NWO was hot, but like, after a big NWO segment, then you had, like, Chris Jericho versus Mike Enos or something, you know? And you're like,
yeah.
What the hell is this match, you know?
There were some of the matches were good, but it was still just kind of like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, there were some really good matches. But 100% of them meant absolutely nothing. So.
Yes, that's certainly something the writing staff could help. And I think that's part of Bourne's problem is that they kind of started to push him right before they did this angle. And then, he was involved very early on, but then they let him go by the wayside afterwards.
Yep. I really would have liked to have seen him in the SummerSlam main event instead of R-Truth. I think that would have been nice.
I really could have. Hell, put him in John Morrison's spot. Either those two really could have been booted, and I would not have been upset.
Nope. I agree with that.
Well, my good sir, is there any other small points from Raw that you'd like to bring up?
No, I think we've been pretty thorough on everything. I don't care to talk about the women's match, so I think we're done.
Oh, yeah, no, that is not worth wasting our breath on.
Nope.
And, I think we wanted to take care of some in-house orders here.
Yes, indeed.
So, fantasy football draft in full swing.
Yes, this is the second annual time I've been able to put together a draft with all of the Stunt Granny contributors, you and me, Jeremy, Eric, Jordan, Zura, a new member to the team, so he's in the draft as well, along with the aforementioned Dean Sheen and a few other people, including my good close personal friend Noah from way back in the day.
Okay. I was kind of wondering who he was.
Yep. He's a friend of mine going all the way back to, like, second grade, so.
Cool.
I try to always get him in a fantasy draft as well, so, you know, just basically the people closest to the Stunt Granny family, the Stunt Granny universe.
Well, we are...
What's that?
And we are a universe.
We are. We're the most important universe, by the way. Now, as far as the draft goes, we're pretty much halfway through exactly. And so would you like to talk about your team as it stands now?
Yeah. I have only, you know, I told you that I made complimented me on my receivers.
Yes.
And I made one small boo-boo that I can make up for in a later round here.
Yep.
I was choosing between Percy Harvin and Donald Driver on my last receiver pick.
Okay.
And I decided to go with a bit younger guy, just in case.
Sure.
Even though, really, with Donald Driver, anytime he would have scored a touchdown, I would have been doubling my fun.
Okay.
Considering I have Aaron Rodgers as my quarterback.
Indeed.
And I really see no reason to yank him out of the lineup aside from the day that he does not play.
Right.
The problem with Harvin is that the Vikings and the Cowboys both have week four off.
Right.
So that only leaves me with Hines Ward as a receiver in week four. So I will at some juncture need to pick up myself another wide receiver.
Luckily, there are some good ones left on the board. There's roughly 7 to 10 that I would still be happy with drafting. And like you said, it's only a one-week problem anyway. So,
yeah.
Not the world's biggest deal, but I think a wide receiver group of Miles Austin, Hines Ward, and Percy Harvin is pretty damn solid. So, can't complain.
Yeah. That is probably my strong suit. My running backs. I think that's why I went with a running back as my first, real bench player.
Sure. You kind of have.
Yeah. This whole two-headed monster garbage just about everywhere in the league is really effing with fantasy football in general.
Somewhere along the way, they're going to have to change the way fantasy football is done to accommodate this. But almost every team has a two-headed monster now, and it makes running backs impossible to draft.
Yeah. And that was the other reason why. I had no qualms when I saw that I was, what am I, number five or number six?
I can't remember. Yep.
Five. I was like, oh, man, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I saw the spot that I was in. I'm just like, oh, this is no fun.
Yeah.
Because those top four running backs, and I don't even know if I'd say four. I would definitely say the top three.
Right.
With Johnson, Peterson, and Jones-Drew.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, okay, they're pretty much no-brainers, but after that, it's just like,
Right.
Jeez, I mean, not that I think that Michael Turner is some chump change or anything, but...
He made some sense at number four, but then once you get past him, oh boy.
Yeah. You're talking some serious drop-off, so I was more than happy to uh, pick up Mr. Rogers and play in his neighborhood.
Yes, indeed.
People may call into question his ability to lead his team to wins in the playoffs or whatever, but in fantasy football, I can give a rat's ass whether he wins a game or loses. So long as his stats look good, that's all that matters.
In fact, some of the best fantasy contributors come from bad teams sometimes, so it really doesn't matter at all there.
Yep.
The biggest thing about Rodgers is that the two offensive tackles are healthy. Because if they're not healthy, he's getting killed this year. But the backs are healthy, so he should be okay.
Yeah, and plus they drafted a lineman.
Yep.
So, hey, I figured he had some pretty damn good stats last year. I'm like, well, this looks good enough for me.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So, a few quarterbacks went in the first round. This is the byproduct of people not being sure about the running backs out there. Five running backs went in the first round out of ten picks. A few years ago, it would have been probably 8 or 9 out of ten. But Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Peyton Manning were all picked in the first round. And I can't blame a single one of those picks because they're just safer. They're just safer than a running back.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, outside of – well, and I guess that is the thing with my running backs is they're all just – not only are they part of the two-headed monster, like I'm not sure my boy LeSean McCoy there for the Eagles – the former Pitt Panther.
Yeah.
He's kind of a he had decent stats for what he was in for last year, but I think a number of people questioned if he could put up with the beating of an entire season, and we shall see on that front. I'm erring on the I watched him play. I'm going to hope that he can pull this off in the NFL.
Sure. Now, if he works, that's an outstanding value in the fourth round. So.
Yeah. And I guess that was the other thing, too. Like, when I pick a quarterback that early, it's kind of like, well, I've almost got to make up for it and pick up the running backs slightly quicker here. So, round 2, round 4 is like, okay, I need to do something about this problem so I don't at least get, it's a fucking crapshoot half the time anyway, but you try to protect yourself every which way but loose.
That's right.
Well, do you have any highlights from your team that you want to expound on?
Well, sure. I'll just say that I'm trying a new strategy this year, having all my starters have the same bye week. It's a strategy I thought about last year, and I decided to pull the trigger this year. Basically, the bye week was just dependent on who was available in the first round. And in the first round, I went with Andre Johnson. Once again, it's weird to take a wide receiver in the first round, but I felt like it was much safer and taking whoever running back was out there at the time. I thought about, like, Ray Rice, and I thought about D'Angelo Williams, and just the bottom line was, I know Andre Johnson's going to play 16 games, and I know he's going to catch a lot of passes and score a lot of touchdowns, and I just feel safer. You gotta pick the right guy in the first round. So I went with Andre Johnson, and as a corollary to that, I felt like the teams with week 7 bye weeks were pretty good teams fantasy-wise. Houston, Indianapolis, Detroit Lions, and the New York Jets. And it just so happened that I didn't get any New York Jets. Was looking at Sean Green, but Eric picked him before it came back to me in the second round. So I went with Reggie Wayne in the second round. I feel like no one's going to have better wide receivers than me. I got Andre Johnson and Reggie Wayne. I'm very comfortable with that.
I did not notice that, and that's one of those ones that I pull out that you can't beat that with a stick.
Sure, sure. I feel like every starter I have is right up there among the top starters in the league. And, you know, just Houston and Indianapolis are great teams for fantasy purposes. So it worked out pretty slick. Got Matt Schaub at quarterback, Andre Johnson and Reggie Wayne starting at receiver, Owen Daniels at tight end. Those are among the top 5 to 7 people at their position, you know? So running back's a little shaky, but everybody's running backs are shaky. So that makes it a little easier to swallow. I've got Joseph Addai, and I picked Donald Brown for insurance purposes there, and then Best, the rookie out of Detroit. One of those guys is going to bust out. I feel pretty good about Best. He could be the rookie of the year this year. So.
Yeah, that's all you got to hope for. So by keeping all your bye week the same week, are you pretty much just saying F that week and I'll just try and dominate the rest of the other weeks? Like you just kind of get that all out of the way all at once?
Yeah. Get the you know, the nerve-wracking and the loss out of the way. You know, this makes it much more palatable. I'm probably going to lose one time. But hopefully between the starters I'm picking and the backups I'm picking, I will cobble together a team good enough to win every other week. So that was definitely the strategy there. Instead of having to worry about, you know, once a week, weeks 4 through 10, you got to worry about somebody having off, you know? So it's something I think that kind of makes sense if you think about it. And a lot of it, I almost lost Matt Schaub. He almost went in the 3rd round ahead of me. A couple people were thinking about him. I know this from talking to him. And if Matt Schaub had gone, then my whole strategy would have been blown the shit out of. So some of it was luck, you know? It just so happened that I lucked into it.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting strategy that could go quite well, actually.
Sure, sure. Now, injuries could decimate my team, and then it would be a disaster. But that's, you know, everybody takes that chance. So.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, I remember one year. Don't remember what year it was, but I do remember this. I was playing Noah. It was, you know, my friends from school and stuff, and I was playing Noah, and both my running backs were out by halftime. So 1:30 p.m. Central Time, both my running backs are gone. As Jamal Anderson is getting carted off on a stretcher or whatever, my phone starts ringing. Well, it doesn't take two guesses to know that it was Noah on the phone laughing at me. So I will never forget that.
Oh, that's a funny dick move.
Yep. I don't blame him, but I was curious at the time.
Oh man. Yep, I just I try to just look at the numbers and do my best to guess who might be the NFL's next breakout superstar.
Sure.
And go from there.
Yep. No, like I said, you got a good team put together.
Yep. I'm just holding myself back from being too homerish here, but I think I might still have to do that in the coming rounds here.
Gotcha. I read you loud and clear on that, actually.
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, there are two things. It's actually kind of weird. It's been a long time since I've been in the middle of a draft that I've actually participated in.
Okay.
So it's a bit of torture not being near that you know, when you're at the either end or close to either end, you're just like, oh, okay, whatever, I'll pick this guy, and I can't really get screwed out of too many other guys. So, you know, you kind of look up and down the board. When you're in that middle pack, it's just kind of like, fuck, I don't know what's going to go. There are like 10 picks in between my next pick.
Yeah, yeah, it's torture. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then
picks
on top
five
of that.
Picks 5 through 7 are terrible because then there's like double-digit picks until you go again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it, like I said, like maybe it was in baseball or something that I didn't actually get into. Well, I mean, I normally did. I think I just forgot about it or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really haven't been a middle pick. Like, I've either been, like, 1 or 2 or 9 or 10.
Gotcha.
In almost any of the sports, whether it's hockey, football, or baseball.
Okay.
And then on top of that, not having a time constraint is good and bad. Like, I was sitting there at work today with that Percy Harvin pick, just sitting there going, who do I go with now? Like, again, going back to that whole running back dilemma, I'm like, do I go with another running back again right now and wait for the wide receiver? Nah, let's go with the wide receiver.
You know, my list, speaking of having an aneurysm, my list of running backs still available, it's not pretty. And I know I have to pick one more. You know? So it's just pick a name out of the hat at this point.
Yeah, I have a late round wide receiver that I have in mind.
Ooh,
but there are a couple other little things that that I need to grab here and there.
Sure.
Before I go ahead and do that. But yeah, I'm just that's the other thing is we're kind of at that bench portion of things, and it's just kind of like, well, this is where it gets even to be more of a crapshoot. That, you know, you're bound to have somebody pick someone up in like the 12th round. You're just like, seriously, they got that kind of production out of them? Oh.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Go and fuck off. You just hope that you're that person that year.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You hope to get that mid to late round pick where it's like, oh, thank God, he really worked out.
Yep. That and be the first sucker. I guess I'm going to need to make sure I have, the internet on my phone from now on so that I can be like the first person to pick up whoever's the hot flavor for that week.
Sitting there by the computer continually refreshing.
That's always another big one. It's just like, did you get to your computer quick enough after the first week when it's just like, oh shit, I had no idea that was going to blow, that guy was going to blow up.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but that is to be worried about at a much later time. And speaking of later times, it is time for me to get my sippy time beer, so I'm going to send it to you for our little out.
All right. Well, for fantasy football, for Kevin DeFrango, and for the other 8 victims that I will completely decimate this season in fantasy football. My name is Dusty Giebing. This has been Stunt Granny Audio, and we'll try to do better next time.